Well, this week, as part of our Fijian Language Week celebrations, we speak with members of our Fijian community across the country and across the world as they share their stories and how they will be celebrating Fijian Language Week this year. I'm joined now on the phone from Hawaii by Dr. Tarisi Vunindilo, who lectures at the University of Hawaii Hilo and is affiliated with the Department of Anthropology. Tarisi has an MSc in Anthropology and a postgraduate diploma in Māori and Pacific Development from the University of Waikato, a postgraduate diploma in Arts, majoring in Archaeology and a BA in Geography, History and Sociology from the University of South Pacific in Suva, Fiji, amongst other notable qualifications. She has also published two books and several articles about Fijian pottery, language and archaeology. It's a very warm welcome to Dr. Tarisi Vunindilo, Nisa Yandra Vinaka, and thank you so much for your time this morning, Tarisi.
Mula Vinaka, Brian, and Mula Vinaka to all the listeners who are listening in this morning.
Tarisi, firstly, let's start with the history of Fijians and their origins.
Well, that's a very interesting topic and question as well, Brian. Sometimes in terms of, for those of us who grew up in Fiji, there are actually many variations, depending on who you're talking to. What I mean is that many indigenous Fijians, they may respond by saying, especially the older ones who often say that we didn't come from anywhere. We actually came from Fiji. There's nowhere else we came from. And that's usually the response I get when we usually go out into the field doing archaeological research. And then you have the other extreme of the younger generation. The younger ones, what I mean is that those may be who were born from the early 1900s to today, also maybe say 1950 onwards, I would say, who respond immediately would say that we came from Africa. And that's an interesting response because there was a myth or a story that is very well known right across Fiji from 1892 during the colonial days. When the anthropologists and the colonial administrators were in Fiji and were asking elderly people at that time, where did you Fijians come from? But again, the response was what I said before. But then they were trained in such a way that many places in the Pacific often say, oh, you know, in Polynesia, we came from Hawaiki, or we came from, there's always a place where they come from. But many responses was like they didn't come from anywhere else. So a competition was created, Brian, in 1892. So stories came in. This was organized by the colonial administrators. And one of the stories that became that won and was chosen was the story that we came from Tanganyika in Africa. And that story was taken all around Fiji and is now the kind of the looked upon as a confirmed truth. But in actual fact, many anthropologists and archaeologists have said that there may be no direct evidence that we came directly from there. However, there is the archaeological evidence of based on pottery, based on archaeological evidence of charcoal, and you know, other evidence that we dig out from around Fiji that take us 3,000 years ago and connect us back to the island of Taiwan, which is very much part of the Southeast Austronesian migration route that connects Fiji to the rest of the Pacific. So those are the three answers, Brian, I would say that would answer that question you've just given me.
And Tarisi, in your expertise, your travels and your explorations over the years, which of the three do you lean towards in your expert opinion?
For my expert opinion, based on evidence through charcoal testing and pottery, and even linguistic and anthropology. I lean towards the connection that takes us back through to Taiwan, because it connects not only Fiji back that way, but it also connects us around to the islands of, Polynesia, Vanuatu, Tonga, and Samoa, as well as the Solomon Islands and via the Philippines and Indonesia, because it gives us a bigger picture, and there's so many evidence that supports that.
Mm. And just for my own limited reading as well, lining up with many other, origin stories of, other Pacific Island nations also. And now, Teresa, you mentioned pottery as well in, the last question. Talk to us, because you've done a lot of study around Fijian pottery, something which, of course, I've never heard of. But can you share more around this and its origins?
Yes. I gravitated towards this at a very young age. I don't know why, but I had so much interest in trying to understand why, pottery was such a key resource for us in the Pacific, and in my case in Fiji. Pottery was very much, part and parcel of our lives, because it was used for cooking and, of course, food provide sustenance to us. And also it became an art form, and it became evidence of migration. And when I say the connection that takes us back to Taiwan, the modern day Taiwan that we know now is very much has a lot of connection to China. But the Taiwan I'm referring to consisted of the indigenous Taiwan people, who very much are like the people of the Pacific today. And also, they have pottery as well. So when you look at pottery, they are made from special types of clay. And in the clay, it also consisted of sand. So the pottery and the sand are mixed together. And it has compounds that are actually tested, and they provide carbon dating. So most of the pottery that we find in Fiji, we normally send it out to Florida. They have a lab there, and also some of them are taken over to Japan. And it's very interesting when you go into the science of pottery. But for me, I was kind of very interested in the science as well as the cultural aspect of it, because I know in Fiji, the tradition of making pottery is still alive today. And that's the beauty of it. Because archaeology, we kind of look at prehistory. But in many parts of the Pacific, there is a prehistoric part, but there's also a current history part. So we're looking at the past, but there are also the potters that are still alive today. So the reason why I was interested in it, when I later found out from my mother that my grandfather's line, all my grandfather's grandmothers were potters. So I never knew this, but my interest into pottery was started at a very young age. I normally just pick things up, thinking they were rocks. But later on, with my trained eyes, I later found out that some of the things I normally pick up around where I grew up were actually pottery. And when we study this pottery, we also look at the patterns and the design. So one is by looking at the compounds, the scientific side of it, but you also look at the patterns and the design. And the design also provides the evidence of how long those pottery were in existence. And one of the pottery that is very popular, that has taken a lot of global attention by archaeologists, is the Lapita pottery. The Lapita pottery is reddish in color, and what is interesting about it is that they are designed on the outside, but also on the inner lip of the pot. And wherever Lapita is found, it automatically dates to 3,000 years ago, which is like 1,290 before Christ was born. So that kind of is evidence that many parts of the Pacific were inhabited by people, while, when the Son of God, Jesus, was on earth, there was so much attention of what human habitation was like on the other side of the globe. But now there's a switch. that many archaeologists from the other side of the world are looking at our Pacific nations and islands, realizing that many of our people were in existence by using pottery as evidence, Brian.
That's so fascinating, Teresi. It reminds me, many years ago, I interviewed a gentleman, a Palangi gentleman, who was a former architect, and he did like a five-year study around the migration of, Pacific peoples. And his theory was that, if you go all the way back, Polynesians, Pacific Islanders, go as far back as to one of the 12 tribes of Israel coming, through, the Middle East, down through around the Southeast Asia and out into the Pacific. And it's like, oh my gosh, this is incredible. Teresi, we talk about pottery, and it's great, that your initial interest, finding out the personal connection there through, your previous generations. But, we look at Fiji history, the people of Fiji, and of course the language, which is, such a large component of any culture, very unique, even amongst the Pacific languages, with so many different dialects. And even if we, look at the physical, features of Fijians, that, differing, even amongst Pacific Islanders.
Absolutely, absolutely. That's the beauty about it. And it's interesting too, we have to include geography into the mix. When I say that, I mean, if you look at the Pacific and you look at Fiji, we are right in the middle. And also if you look at the waves and the ocean, how it moves, it has to affect the trading routes and how our ancestors travel in those days in their large waka and wanga, so when you look at the bigger picture, then you're starting to kind of visualize, oh wow, the ocean was the highway of our people. They moved from one place to another in a very fluid fashion, which is so beautiful to see. There was no need for passports, is what we have today. They knew who their relations were. And so when they moved around, there was a lot of that intermarriage that happened. And in the case of Fiji, we are like right on the border of what anthropologists have actually called, the Polynesia, Melanesia, and, Micronesia. These three regions were not there when our people were in our part of the world. But when the anthropologists came, they put us into these three categories. But when you look at Fiji, we kind of comprise of the three. Because if you look at the people and the migration that come from Taiwan and come via Southeast Asia, naturally, they would have been stopping and resting along the way. And for me, now that I keep looking at us Fijians, looking at our physical, beautiful physical traits, I would say, right?
Yes, most language, definitely.
It makes one think of interactions and marriage that took place between the Papuans. I'm using anthropological words here. So the Papuans are not the Papua New Guinean people today. That was another cluster of people that they put us in. Those of our people who are of darker skin, and also those of what they call the Mongoloids, who are kind of more fairer skin with long wavy hair. So I kind of look at us as kind of a mixture of both. So definitely when workers come and rested in Fiji, people arrive and looking for replenishment of water and getting food. Definitely, people would have gotten off the island, the boats or gone onto the island, and some may have stayed and the rest continued on. So I kind of look at us as kind of a mixture of these two. So we are a mix of the Papuan group of people, darker skin, and we also a mix of the Mongoloids, who are the more lighter skin, and that's what make us what we are today. And that's the beauty of it. So I would like to, encourage our listeners, to celebrate, their heritage. The heritage should not limit us. We should celebrate it.
Teresi, fascinating. That's the only word I can think of. Teresi, your thoughts, around, or theories as to why, this highway, the largest highway, this largest body of water in the world, which we as Polynesians and previous generations traversed so easily. Why did our seafaring ways stop? Do you think it was once the white men came into Polynesia that, you know, that would be part of the reason, or your thoughts?
Well, I would say the navigation knowledge, Brian, was so rich, and there's still so much to explore and know more about it. Every time I talk about navigation in my classes at University of Auckland or here in Hawaii, you know, I just get excited because there's so much connection of our people with nature. They know the waves, they know the clouds, and they know the environment, they know their birds, and therefore, when those factors that I just called out, the clouds, the birds, the waves, they were kind of natural modes of language to them. To me, when I look back in those times, nature was very much part of them. Nature and culture was one. Therefore, they kind of know when to navigate or when to travel, how, all of those questions, they know it very well. So to me, the knowledge of navigating by our people was so advanced that even engineers and even, seafaring people today who are of European background, they are in awe of it. You know, they kind of like, how can they come up with, you know, this complicated and complex method of travel on this vast ocean by building this large vaca and knowing what resource to make? So they know what trees to cut and what trees to actually turn into these large vakas, how to weave those amazing sails, and how to utilize their knowledge out there to travel safely from one point to another. Those knowledge were there long, long before the white people came. And as you can remember, in many of Captain James Cook's journals, he actually noted the amazing speed many of these vakas had. He was traveling over to Tonga, and he noticed these large vakas that just, you know, speed past his Endeavour. But Endeavour was a large vaka that was celebrated by the European people at that time. But because of our people, you know, we live a very humble life. You know, we don't shout out from the rooftops our amazing achievements. But ours were so much better than theirs, according to James Cook. So again, you can see how our people adapted. It all comes back down to adaptation and just being so full of wisdom that they can be able to marry and bring in together nature, what God has provided to them, and how they can create life and living together as a people by combining all of that. And that's how a navigation culture came to be.
Amazing too, because when you look at the America's Cup race, you know, the most celebrated of races, and the crafts that they use, of course, an idea, you know, based on the, you know, our waka. So now, you know, Teresi, we've talked about, you know, we've delved into, you know, past history. Let's fast forward to 2018 and recent history, which you yourself were involved in. With regards to petition you started, the trademarking of the word mbula by American businessman in Florida, Ross Kashtan, which of course caused you know, much uproar, especially amongst our, you know, Fijian brothers and sisters. Update with regards to that petition, please.
Yes, thank you so much. We've gone past the 5,000 mark that we actually wanted, and the support, I would say, Brian, was very, very overwhelming by not only Fijians, but friends of Fijians. So there was so many support from all over the world. And what we have done so far is we are collecting all the online petition. And fortunately enough, I've got the support and contact through the Fiji Embassy in Washington, D.C., we've got a contact of a Fijian that lives in Florida who will physically take the documentation that I have put together from the online petition to for him to actually physically take to Ross. That's part of the plan. So that is going to happen this week. And we deliberately chose this week, given the fact that it is the celebration of Fijian Language Week. And everything Fijian is going to be celebrated this week. So it's going to be very historical as well. So next time, maybe when we speak before the end of the Fijian Language Week, I will give you a response on what the response was like from Ross. So that's something to look forward to. So the petition is going to be physically given by hand to Ross in Florida. So that's the first update. The second update is I've also created a T-shirt movement to kind of get the petition more visual out there. So one was doing the online version, and now it's doing the visual. So you both look so beautiful with Nemai yesterday with your beautiful T-shirt. So that's another a project that I've done, not only by myself, but by the support of these two beautiful women. I have to publicly acknowledge Rowena Rooney and Betty Lotto. And they both were my Fijian language students in New Zealand through the Pacific Education Center. And I just want to give them my big Vinaka Vakalevu for their amazing support behind the scenes to get the T-shirt off the ground. And the third one is on Saturday. Both Betty and Rowena will have a stall at the Mengrei Park, where there's a celebration of the Fiji Festival there. And so I'd like to encourage many of our friends who are listening to go over and check our stall out. That we will be selling more T-shirts there, and also the amazing coconut, pineapple pie from Samsa with the signature pie created. That's for those who will come and support our movement there, Brian.
And before you go, of course, Fiji Language Week 2018, Terisi, some words of encouragement in the beautiful Fijian mother tongue to our Fijian community listening in this morning.
Vinaka Vakalevu, Wagini Vinaka Natikinongo, and Isolivia and Nangonamo, Vakamagalayani, we came in the Kango, the Vakarong to Mai, Navea Sayaka Roa, Vakatanakin, we came in Vakarong to me, Vinaka Vakalevu, Nanomi Vito Koli, and the Kena Vakama, and the Kenamaro Tikitiko, Navakan attacking the Voss of Vakaviti, and another Mexico in Isilandi. Kongono vya viunge tikiri wiki mni na wakarongo tiku mai na nanda tomana tiku nga na nanda vosa waka viti veira na Luvenda veira na Makumbunda mena mbula tiku nga na nanda vosa en venga ona sandera mai. On that note, Brian, just given a word of encouragement for our Fijian listeners to continue to use the language and to share this beautiful language to our young ones, to our children and our grandchildren, so that it may continue to survive and remain in years to come.
Dr. Terisi Vunindilo, Department of Anthropology at the University of Hawaii Hilo. A very big Vinaka Vakalevu, Terisi. Fascinating, encouraging, inspiring, all in one. Thank you so much for your time and wishing you all the very best for your ongoing work in Hawaii. And we look forward to when you're back on our shores to continue sharing the vast knowledge that you have. Thank you again.